Some of us call it aunt flow, others call it our period. Whatever you call it, half the population experiences it, and yet we rarely, if ever, talk about it, let alone the financial impacts of this monthly visitor. Well, now there's a movement underway to end a sales tax on period products like tampons and pads. Jennifer Weiss-Wolf, co-founder of Period Equity, a legal organization dedicated to menstrual equity, joins us now with more. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, glad to be here.
First off, what does menstrual equity mean, and how does it impact our daily lives?
Menstrual equity is a frame and a phrase to capture this very essence of what it would look like to have a policy agenda that focused on engagement, participation in school, in the workplace, truly in our democracy, and how that intersects with menstruation and access to menstrual products and information about menstruation so that people can really live their healthiest, best lives.
Okay, and part of that includes how much we spend on menstrual products. California just put a pause on a sales tax of menstrual products, but that's only for 2 years. You're working to get all states to end sales tax permanently. Tell us a little bit more about that effort.
Yeah, the tampon tax. So this is a campaign that kicked off back in 2015 with a national petition that I'd put up with Cosmopolitan magazine. And has succeeded over the past 4 years in 32 states actually introducing legislation to do just that, to eliminate the sales tax on menstrual products. As you mentioned, California is one of the states that has taken action. They did so through their budget, which will last for 2 years starting at the beginning of 2020. But six other states have actually gotten it done with something that's actually really remarkable in today's politics, which is bipartisan support.
Well, some people might be saying, okay, well, we pay sales tax on lots of things. Is there a male equivalent to this? Why is this such a big deal?
Well, we do pay sales tax on lots of things, and that's true. But states are allowed to make exemptions for items that they deem to be necessary. And states have actually chosen a lot of kind of not so necessary objects or items to put in that category, ranging from barbecued sunflower seeds to gun club memberships to Mardi Gras beads. People often point to the fact that Viagra is sales tax exempt. That's because it's a prescription medication. But indeed, it's worth questioning why it was that menstrual products were almost routinely left off the table on that examination.
What do states stand to lose if they repeal these types of taxes? I mean, I can only imagine it's a great source of revenue for them.
Well, you know, it obviously depends on the population and the number of people in the state who menstruate and buy menstrual products. So it can range from $1 million in the state of Utah. It was $20 million in the state of California, which for what it's worth in terms of, you know, large state budgets is probably a drop in the bucket as far as, you know, the state's economy is concerned. But I think the broader equity and fairness question is why should that revenue be on the backs of just those who menstruate when there are items that we could choose to replace that with that are either less necessary or used equally by the whole population.
I want to bring up something that might seem far removed, but you say it's not. So last week, there was a lot of conservative criticism over Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's $80 haircut. And you've argued that it's all part of the same pink tax, as you call it, which really is the practice of charging more for products and services that target women. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, exactly. The pink tax is a little different. It's not a state-generated revenue. It's price gouging. But I think both are examples of you know, how the economy really is not set up to work in favor of women's interests. Everything from the wage gap to glass ceilings to the idea that women are often frequently charged more for the same items, that our needs are not considered in making sales tax policy. This all adds up to the same equation in that it costs more to be a woman in this society.
And you now argue that this tampon tax specifically is unconstitutional. What's next in this effort?
Yeah, so that is the next chapter in this advocacy. It's been a robust policy campaign, but a group of lawyers and I have gotten together to make the case that, in fact, this is sex-based discrimination and therefore unconstitutional and therefore illegal. So it's not really just a matter now of asking legislators to do the right thing, but it's bringing the force of the law to let them know that they must cease this practice.
And tomorrow happens to be Period Day. What can we expect next?
Well, it's amazing to see so much activism and activity and enthusiasm for an issue that was really something of an orphan issue. So I think that is just a taste of what's to come. Once people start talking about periods and menstruation, they're actually surprised to realize, one, it's not that hard to talk about, and two, that there are just a lot of seemingly neutral or quiet policies that have been not serving our interests. And if we just speak up about it, we can make positive change for all in our society and really move towards a greater model of equity and equality.
Jennifer Weiss-Wolf, she's the co-founder of Period Equity, a legal organization dedicated to what activists call menstrual equity. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for this conversation.